I love these guys. You know what? They're like Bill and Ted meet Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, I kind of like to think of them as Rosencrantz and Guildenstern meet Zombie Takeout.
Yes. Who?
What's up? Welcome to episode 112 of Zombie Takeout,
Zombie Takeout.
the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And of course, before we get into this week's movie, we've got a bit of listener submitted. This is from William via our site in reference to last week's show. Quick rebuke, the blob from South Park, which you referenced, and possibly this movie, though I haven't seen it, is a reference to Akira, in which the main character begins to evolve uncontrollably. I think that's what I was thinking when I saw that episode of South Park.
Well,
and it makes more sense than referencing this, you know, obscure movie that no one's ever seen.
Well, the thing is, this was done right. South Park was done right after this came out.
Right.
So it would have been like a current movie in there that everybody had seen. The thing is.
Well, no, that's the thing. Not a lot of people saw Evolution. It was a bomb.
Well, the thing is also.
And Akira is a classic.
You're talking about two very similar scenes.
Yeah.
Something evolved out of control.
Yeah, I after William pointed this out, I'm wondering if the scene in Evolution was a reference to Akira.
It very well could be, actually.
Yeah.
So, in my defense, of course, it's been years since I'd seen this South Park episode.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I did not see Akira until episode...
Oh, that's right, that was the first time, so yeah.
Yeah, so...
Right, you wouldn't have made that connection. I think I just, it didn't occur to me as an Evolution reference because I just assumed it was Akira.
But visually, from what I remember of the episode, it looked a lot like
like the
that.
Thing in Evolution. Okay.
The scenery and everything I'm talking about. I'm trying to remember the scene from Akira and that, but
yeah,
that scene from Evolution looked a lot like the scene from South Park visually.
We've also got something from John Phillips in reference to this week's movie. He posted this on the trailer saying, "This is my favorite Kevin Smith movie." You also have had a little exchange with John in the on the page.
Well, right. I made a... I talked about... I was kind of disgusted with the Academy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, more than just kinda. You know, we've already talked on this show about how it's shocking that Helena Bonham Carter has never won an
right.
award. Then I find out Glenn Close had never won one either.
Mm-hmm. That was part of your reason for switching to Albert Nobbs and convincing me to do it, even though I was right.
Yeah. I had thought she had won for Fatal Attraction at least.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't win for that. Then the ultimate fuck you has to be Gary Oldman sitting there like a chump.
Yeah.
First time ever nominated.
Now, I didn't watch the awards. I learned my lesson last year.
Good God, you were spared a train wreck and a half there.
Our
audio was fucking better than the Academy Awards.
Really?
That was... seriously, they were having audio problems
mm-hmm.
throughout the majority of the cast.
Now, was this first nomination for Best Actor or first nomination, period?
I think... From what they said, it was his first time ever nominated.
Because he does tend to lean towards the supporting roles.
True. But, oh my God. He never even been nominated for Immortal Beloved or Sid and Nancy?
I mean, he's brilliant. No argument there. He's one of my favorites. But he leans towards the supporting roles. Also, he's a character actor.
And I'm not...
And the Academy doesn't tend to like character actors.
I'm not thinking he should be nominated for, you know, Harry Potter
mm-hmm.
or, you
Is
know,
he?
Batman.
Yeah, he was in the Harry Potter movies, yeah.
But, I mean, he's done...
Oh, he's done some brilliant work, yeah.
Some fantastic work.
Referencing our intro this week, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead is brilliant.
Hell yes.
He should have gotten something for that.
Yeah. So in my little mini, like fuck you Academy, I point out that someone who does have an Oscar, and that is John Wayne. They gave him an award for acting. And personally, I would rank him somewhere between Tom Green and Carrot Top as an actor.
Well, maybe Danny DeVito, because, he's got his thing, he had his thing, and he did it well. He just had nothing else.
Danny DeVito can actually draw out emotion, though, if,
Yeah, true,
I
true.
mean,
That was off the top of my head.
even as Louis De Palma, I think, I mean, in fairness,
Yeah, true. He did some brilliant work with that character, you're right.
you can compare John Wayne to Schwarzenegger,
There
Stallone,
you go.
those
Better.
guys.
Better.
They're not actors.
No.
They're not actors by a long shot. They can keep their eyes open, so they're not Wizzo.
But
Nobody's that
in
bad.
the same sense as and pretty much every action star, which if you think about it is what Wayne was.
Right.
They do one thing, they do it well.
Right. But here is how he did win it. The nominees for that year, with he won it for True Grit, that was just remade, a couple of years ago. That what's his name just won it for that also. I think it's one of the few times where it's a movie's been remade and the same dude has won, best actor for the same role.
Right.
But anyway, you had these slouches against him. Some guy named Richard Burton, some guy named Peter O'Toole.
God.
Real fucking, I mean, where do they even find these guys? Don't they? But anyway, the real reason is you had Dustin Hoffman and John Voight from the same movie. They were both in Midnight Cowboy that year, and Midnight Cowboy won almost every other major category.
Oh, so they threw something else a bone.
Well, they split the vote.
Oh, right. Yeah, your logic you had
Two guys from the
about the
same
help,
movie,
right? Yeah.
two guys from the same movie, best actor, split the vote, and John Wayne had been in it for like 40 years, and whoever was not voting for Midnight Cowboy voted for him.
Right.
I mean, Midnight Cowboy was best picture, director, supporting, of course, picture director,
Yeah.
supporting actress. I think the only thing they didn't win was actress and supporting actor who went to some slouch named Jack Nicholson in Easy Rider. Some shit film named Easy Rider. So yeah, that's how Wayne did it. Just for the record.
And that leads us nicely to the final total. 2-1. I got two. I got both supporting categories. You got best actor. I would have had best actress if you hadn't changed my mind. But it also, your logic with splitting the vote did not work this year because
No,
Octavia
I
Spencer
noticed
did
that.
win. Yeah.
It was kind of amazing that the Academy went anywhere near that movie. It's not gonna be looked upon kindly in the future. What's gonna lead to, actually, is about 30 years from now, people are going to be having the same conversation about Sandra Bullock getting an Academy
Right,
Award.
right. It was the politically correct choice, which is the point I was making in the middle of your back and forth with John. The fact that we were able to, at least initially, nail the top six categories between the two of us without having seen one of the movies speaks volumes about how they work.
It
It's
was obvious that the artist was going to run away with it.
politics and image.
Yeah.
You don't, it has nothing to do with the quality of the movies.
The artist had the nostalgia factor, which just they eat up almost all the time.
And it swept the BAFTAs, which what and I was looking at the BAFTA results, with the exception of Best Film, which they tend to go British on, so they went with Tinker Tailor. They practically mirrored the Oscars.
But I kind of regretting that I didn't get a chance to see The Artist when it was in town, and I wouldn't mind taking a look, checking it out.
Very soon it'll be on Netflix. They're actually getting
Yeah.
it before the pay channels.
Wow.
Okay, I think that covers our
I
Academy
think it does
Awards
too.
conversation. I think that's all that needs to be said there. We've got a little bit of news. before we get to this week's movie.
Sure.
First story, David Wayne talks working with Paul Rudd on Wanderlust. Now, this seems a little out of our wheelhouse, but you'll see why I'm bringing this up. You know, it doesn't get interesting until the last three questions of the interview. The interviewer asked, I do also want to ask you about the potential for a Wet Hot American Summer sequel, because Michael Showalter recently said that the project is 100% going to happen. Can you confirm or deny? And Wayne said, he since has revised that statement. We're writing the script and putting the elements together. It's a process in a real way. The interviewer then asked, what would you say is the hardest element of putting that together? Well, the hardest part will be gathering up the 25 huge stars in one place at one time for a very, very low-budget movie. We're going to do our best. And the last question was basically just about the cast, and he said, you know, they're all really cool and amazing. So they're doing a sequel to Wet Hot American Summer, and it sounds like with the original cast.
Huh. Pretty cool,
yeah.
I think.
Well, we can hope.
Yeah.
And the next story. Oh, that was, by the way, that was from Cinema Blend. And next story from IO9. American Psycho director brings bi-curious vampire to boarding school in The Moth Diaries. Writer and director Mary Harron made Patrick Bateman a household name in her American Psycho adaptation and brought historical fiction to life in I Shot Andy Warhol and the notorious Betty Page. Now she's out to see if she can make you care about vampires again in her indie boarding school horror flick, The Moth Diaries. The movie is Harron's adaptation of Rachel Klein's novel of the same name. Sarah Mary Tudor Bulger plays Rebecca, a student in an all-girls boarding school, who becomes suspicious of Ernessa, played by Lily Cole. After Ernessa becomes suspiciously close to a fellow classmate, Lucy. Yeah, vampire movie, but vampire lesbians in an all-girl school. And let's face it, American Psycho is pretty damn graphic in both respects, so this could be fun.
But seriously, do they have to be vampires?
It's a perennial thing, and yeah, Twilight killed it for all of us. But
I mean,
this could bring it back.
It's not even just Twilight. It's just the quantity of vampire movies.
They've kind of been a big thing since, like, what, the early to mid-90s?
Yeah.
Interview with a Vampire was kind of what set that off, yeah.
And it just hasn't gone away.
That's true. It never ebbed.
I mean, I think I asked, I don't know how many episodes it was, if I was the only one that was bored of vampires, but I think it's been more than answered that no, I'm not the only one. I think there's just a growing number of people that are just, it just needs a rest.
Mm.
We could do some other undead creature.
Hopefully after this movie. It'd be interesting to see. Well, there's going to be a Frankenstein movie coming out. That's an interesting one to revisit.
I'm sorry.
Mummies are kind. I'm kind of done with mummies after the Brendan Fraser thing.
Ready for your daddies, huh?
But I'm pumped.
What?
I'm just trying to think of another monster, and zombies are kind of have been done to death too.
Just be destroyed on sight.
Yeah. What could they do? I mean, unless you create a new monster.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping for a giant monster kind of craze to happen after, you know, Cloverfield and King Kong. But we haven't seen too many of them.
Like a black pudding thing that ate Cleveland. I don't know. Something different, man.
Another Blob remake. Okay. And I guess that brings us to this week's movie, which is from 1997, Chasing Amy.
The worst segue ever. What's this have to do with that?
I don't know. It seemed like a lull. And, of course, the impromptu plot summary.
Brought to you by me. If you need a dude just sitting around in the middle of the screen, you could hire me.
Mm-hmm. And by Archie Comics. It's all about the subtext.
The king of Archie's, the queen of Archie's world. All right, so we have some suburbanites. They are comic book authors and rather successful too. I finally got to watch the cutscenes last night, and they had this scene where they're having this conversation in the beginning. It should have been, this was how the movie was supposed to start. Mm-hmm. They're in a comic book shop buying their own comic book, and the runner, the purveyors of comics, talk shit about their comic to them, putting it down, pretty much quoting verbatim criticisms of Mallrats to them, and his response after they calmly walk away and are like, oh, whatever, they throw a garbage can through the window with the check, you know, three times the amount of the window, saying, I'm rich, suck it, you know.
Nice. They should have left
paraphrasing,
that in.
Chris. I know, paraphrasing, but they, yeah, he said that, but the whole, you know, comic book convention to begin it and end it was really nice way to do it, so I can't blame him for that. But anyway, they meet they're in the big scary city, where they're at a comic book convention, and there's some awesome people at this convention, let me tell you. And he meets someone that's not as awesome, I guess. He meets a girl, and then and there's tension, and you're kind of wondering, like, wow, is this some sort of chick flick? Well, she turns out to be gay, although she doesn't turn out to really be gay, but she turns out to be gay. That doesn't make sense, I know. But they have some sort of relationship, and he finds out she has a past, and to quote Dr. Evil, it got weird. But hilarity ensues.
Now, I will say, starting off, I loved, of course, Clerks masterpiece. I loved Mallrats. This was the first movie for Kevin Smith movie for me where he kind of started to go down a little bit. No pun intended. It wasn't quite as good as the previous ones to me.
This has a lot more complexity to it than anything he had done. Actually, really, even since this, you know?
Yeah. And in my opinion, he kind of bit off maybe a little more than he could chew in that respect.
Probably, but it was fun to watch him try.
And I think also another issue is some of the casting. Bit of trivia. When Kevin Smith pitched the idea to Miramax, he also said that he'd written parts with his friends Ben Affleck, Jason Lee, and Joey Lauren Adams in mind. Miramax, however, wanted to cast people who already had celebrity status, such as Jon Stewart, David Schwimmer, and Drew Barrymore. All three were actually suggested. The film's original budget was $3 million. Depending on Miramax's support, ultimately Smith suggested he'd make it on his own, kind of like he did with Red State, and sell it back to them for distribution. The budget was cut to $250,000. Now, Jason Lee was flawless in this movie.
Oh, brilliant.
And this is one of the first things I've liked Affleck in. But I think Joey Lauren Adams was a mistake.
I think Affleck, he chewed a lot of scenery. It's really the honest way of putting it.
Well, yeah, but like, as I've said a number of times, I like him in comedy, and I don't know if you can really count Mallrats since it was a small part. This was the first bigger comedic role I've seen him in, and it was better than a lot of things I
well, if I'm not mistaken,
it improved my opinion of him.
If I'm not mistaken, it was really his first real role.
I mean,
in anything.
It's credited with launching his career, because nobody knew who he was in Mallrats.
Well, when we were, you know, when we were watching this get made,
yeah.
Nobody, I mean, the people that I had brought with me had never seen him in anything.
Okay.
You know, so it was just like, oh, you know, they were saying he was kind of cute, but too bad he's gay. those are real quotes. Before anything went down or anybody knew about anything, they just assumed he was gay.
Mm-hmm.
He had a small role in School Ties, I see here.
Yeah.
And that's about it, really. And Mallrats.
Mm-hmm. But Affleck was decent. I mean, yeah, it was a little sketchy at points. After he gets the invite to the gay club, not to spoil much there, from Hooper, the character completely changes.
Well,
he's kind of not exactly depressive, but very serious for the beginning of the movie. He's the straight man to Lee, and then he gets that, invite, and he, I don't know how to describe it, he just kind of becomes a little too happy.
Well, I think, and I did watch this with Mrs. Scotto, and she had probably a great point. He had either being smarmy or he had furrowed brow.
Yeah.
And that was
Good point.
pretty
He goes
much
from furrowed brow to smarmy at that point. Yeah, well put.
that was about the range of the character that he was able
Yeah,
to do. There was not much in between. I mean, yeah, the whole crux of the movie, though, is he's a jerk. The character that
Yeah.
he's playing is that he's pretty much an asshole, too self-centered for his own goddamn good. And even when he's given advice and told what to do, he still just goes
Right.
and fucks it all up in spectacular fashion.
Yes. Do we want to jump to that scene?
Ah,
Or we'll get to it.
we'll get to that. We'll get to
Okay.
that.
Now, an issue I've had with a lot of, and well, I'm not even going to keep hammering on Joey Lauren Adams. I just think she was horrible in this movie.
You know,
She cannot do emotion to save her life.
I think she lacks the ability,
And she had this big emotional speech in the middle that was painful.
but she at least, I mean, I didn't object as much because she, you can't accuse her of phoning it in.
This is true.
Granted, her voice is just fucking nails on a chalkboard. And another,
Incidentally, whose idea was it to let her sing?
I have, well, she slept with the director. Come
Oh,
on.
that. Well, but I think she was his ex by this point.
Yes, by then, yeah, she
She
was the
kind of
ex.
inspired the story, if I remember
Exactly.
correctly.
Exactly.
So that wasn't really, I don't know if that was really a factor. But
Oh, I think
she
so.
sings. I recommend mute at that point if you haven't seen the movie.
Though I kind of laugh when, because when she sings the line, you make me feel, and then just the way she sings the word alive, I think back to the knights who say knee in
Yeah,
the
yeah,
Holy
yeah.
Grail. I remember we were running this in our movie theater. One of my heckles says, "Alive," and I just think of that to this day.
Yeah.
Giggle anytime I hear her sing that.
But going back to the beginning of the movie and one of the better performances, Hooper X. I can't. Do you know the actor's name offhand?
No. Somebody who should work a hell of a lot more
Yes.
than he does. Dwight Ewell.
Okay. Great performance, but the character was kind of a plot point.
Oh, man.
An underused character.
He needed to be in this movie more. It's
Absolutely.
true. There's no doubt about it. In fact, there was a scene where he was in it just a bit more, like the record store scene, that went on a little longer and it had a bit of it cut out. Any of it should have just been left in as long as it had him in it.
Yeah.
You know what? One of the first things I had noticed tonight or last night for the first time, watching this, I had always thought that inviting him into the city the second day to the Meow Mix bar,
Right.
I had always thought that that was a joke he was playing on Holden.
Oh.
I didn't realize until last night that Alyssa had actually invited him in. I had just assumed he had said that, we're going to invite the dumb straight guy from the suburbs to the lesbo bar
Right.
to watch him make an ass of himself. Because you even have the dude sitting next to the bar kind of giggling as he's talking.
Yeah.
Because it came off for years. I had thought that that was just like a joke, and it would have probably been better that way. But then it adds the whole relationship into really. It had me looking at this in a completely different way that I had in all the 15 years this had been out. Because she wanted a relationship. She was going after him like a straight woman going after a straight dude. And then surprised when he actually.
Acted like a straight dude.
Yeah.
Well, it had been a while since she had dealt with men, so you can understand her not expecting that.
Right. And what everybody talks about from this movie, you look at any message boards or whatever, it's that scene on the swings. Obviously, that was the time for her to have. She didn't have to fess up to all of it, the finger cuffs and all that stuff.
To have made it a little clearer.
But she could have at least let him know that he would not have been
the first
Neil Armstrong.
Right. At least that would have been something other than yet another standard definition speech. Because those started to get really old. They did like three of them in quick succession.
Yeah. And, well, that's the confusing thing about this. There's all these, you know, definitions and whatnot, but yet she doesn't really live up to her end of what she's, you know, claiming that she was. Because, I mean, if you're living your life as one thing, to just, you know, to say it's a choice of some sort, you know? Yeah. I mean,
well, effectively, she's presented as well as being basically she's bi.
Right, exactly.
Because she says, you know, she was straight through high school and then in college decided to double her odds.
Right.
So, you know, it's a little disingenuous in that respect.
So, that's what made this movie so appealing, is that the couple that it is about are really just fucked up. And you don't really get to see that in movies, you know?
Yeah, true.
You usually get to see this whole, you know, it goes one way and then, oh, maybe there's a little misunderstanding and then everything works out in the end. This, you have them trying to out-fuck up each other.
Right, exactly.
Is really what it comes down to in the end. I see you this and raise you this. The fact that he, you know, chose a public place to try to, like, have it out with her and all that.
Holden makes two incredibly stupid decisions.
Yeah, spectacularly. That's the only adjective you can throw on that.
But I just want to roll it back to the beginning for a particular reason. Again, back to Hooper X. That the speech he does in the comics panel. Now,
speech was that again? I'm sorry.
The whole thing about Star Wars being, you know, about gentrification and whatnot.
Ah, yes.
I loved that speech the first time. Screamingly funny. And this is only the second time I've seen the movie. It was still good, but not really. It didn't hold up.
Are you kidding?
I didn't laugh at it this time.
I was there for the filming of that scene.
What's a movie and killed me? Well, yeah, we should point out, I've been kind of carefully getting into this. Scotto was in the movie.
I was there for the filming of that scene. You don't know how many times I heard that speech that day. And we were still cracking up by the end of the day. I mean, we had to keep it all together.
Right.
It was fucking funny as shit, man. There's some outtakes from the scene also where I don't think we were in the room for that, but I remember being outside where Ben Affleck, instead of saying it's horse shit, tries to say it's hogwash and can't keep a straight face to save his life because the word hogwash is just...
You know, found
the
it funny.
Fuck would say that, yeah.
Yeah. If you're looking for him, it's right after Hooper starts his little diatribe, and it's that first cut to the audience, fourth row back, dead center, long hair, beard.
I seemed so much rounder back then. I don't know.
You probably were.
I don't know. I thought I was in better shape back then than I am now, but I guess not. Who knows? Maybe just the full beard, you know, because I had like, who knows. But there was that, and there was also the ice hockey scene.
And I looked closely in the tighter shot. I didn't see you. I'm guessing you probably were in the very wide shot, but you can't pick anybody out of that.
I am in the ice hockey scene. You can only see me in the entire when they pan back for the entire crowd. I am in the exact upper right-hand corner. I'm wearing like this light blue shirt, and I kind of stand up and then crouch down and stand back up again. You can really only see it on like a widescreen thing.
About that scene. This is another thing that didn't quite fit for me. There's something about that scene when it starts and kind of throughout it until it starts getting dramatic and still and until Holden makes his first spectacularly stupid decision. It kind of felt like almost a comedy sketch.
Well,
The
yeah.
way it's shot and the music that leads into it. It
He's
felt very much
comparing
like a comedy sketch.
the, the fight in the hockey game.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely, of course, I picked up on that.
Yeah. And now I want to talk about a scene that was annoying to hear over and over again.
Oh God, yes, I can imagine.
Especially her, screaming,
Yeah.
boo.
Holden's first impossibly spectacularly stupid decision, confronting her about her past in a very public place.
Yes.
Well, wait, no, not his first spectacularly stupid decision. I'm sorry, his second.
Oh, really? What
His
was
first spectacularly stupid decision was declaring his feelings for her in a car.
Well,
She was trapped.
yeah, I think that was the idea.
Well, yeah, probably.
I don't think that was planned. See, the last two things
We're
were
planned.
him like planning these
This
things
is
out in the
true.
last detail.
Yeah. That was spur of the
And
moment.
yeah, that was just they were in conversation. She's just talking about buying him something just for him to remember the two of them by and stuff. Very strange if you
For
think
a
about,
friend, yeah.
right. In fact, if you look at her behavior throughout all of that leading up to that,
She's leading
she's
him
not
on.
act right completely. The whole, calling him up before he's about to go away for a
Oh,
convention.
total girlfriend behavior.
Yeah, no friend does that. What the fuck? So, yeah, and he raises that by, actually responding, and that's the speech that does. And of course, that's what begins the relationship.
Right. Oh, another thing, something that surprised me about the movie. Of course, Banky, Lee's character, incredibly homophobic.
Yes.
I don't think you could get away with that these days.
No.
Some of the
No.
invectives that are used in this movie,
Right.
Smith would be boycotted worse than he was for Dogma.
Yeah. Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, really though, it's still the worst part about it is never mind his language. It is the fact that somebody claiming that they are a lesbian would go out with someone of the opposite sex. That a conversion would actually happen is far more
But they establish that she's not
controversial
actually a lesbian.
than his dialogue, I think.
They establish that she's not actually a lesbian, though.
Yeah, but they never actually say it.
Well, they don't say it, but she says it was a conscious choice to try the other side.
Right, which is dangerous in itself that, when you start throwing around just,
True, true.
conscious choice.
Yeah.
There's a scene that's actually cut about, a lifestyle choice where she says where Ben Affleck says that, and she's like, "Oh, lifestyle choice, huh? You think this is just that?" And of course, I'm shrugging, thinking, "Well, yeah, that's how you're kind of acting at this point." And I think the community would still have much more of a problem than that, than the dialogue.
Now, I want to mention a couple of one other great cameo in the movie,
There's
aside from
another.
yours.
My friends, Brian Jude.
Oh, okay, I didn't notice that, but okay. Where is he?
I believe he's in the train station.
I
I
could.
could be wrong. You see, all of my Montclair buddies are the train station and the record store. They're just all in the background there.
I was actually referring to Brian O'Halloran and Matt Damon
Oh, yeah,
as
Matt
the
Damon.
I think they were they the publishers or the network executives? Network executives, because it was when they were talking about turning the comic into a animated series.
Yeah, Damon is brilliant in this, but
Yeah.
it's 10, 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another scene that went longer that they cut. There was like their lawyer was in the scene too, and he was cut out
Nice.
entirely from it.
Now, one thing I liked at the time, the first time I saw this, it kind of got old, was the Jaws reference.
Really?
It was a bit crowbarred in, I think. I think it was funny the first time, not quite after.
I think the only problem I had with it was that Banky and Alyssa should have had more of a friendship from that point on, I thought.
Yeah. Well, another issue I have with the film. I think it would have been better if Affleck and Damon, and not Damon, Affleck and Lee's roles were reversed.
Well.
Because she had much better chemistry with Lee than she did with Affleck.
And I thought of that too. That, you know, I was wondering what it would have been like if Jason Lee had played Holden and maybe, you know, somebody else played.
Well, yeah, I don't know if Affleck could have pulled off Mikey. Good point.
Thank you. John Stewart said it sounds interesting though.
Yeah, yeah.
Jason Lee as Holden and John Stewart as Banky.
Interesting. I don't know. Lee was so brilliant in the role. I'm having a hard time seeing anybody else doing it.
Very true. And I could see Schwimmer in that role too, in the role of Holden.
Holden, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But it just got me. There was her couple of scenes with Hooper were a mess because there was zero chemistry there. Like, disturbingly little chemistry. But even with Affleck, there really wasn't, there was no connection. But the minute she's in a scene with Lee, it was amazing the chemistry between the two of them.
Well, a lot of it has to do with Lee, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The performance is just great.
He wasn't there to chew scenery.
Right.
He came to play.
Mm-hmm. Another issue I had was some of the writing. And this is an ongoing issue I have with Kevin Smith. There are just certain points, and I have him here in my notes, but I'm not going to even call him out, where the Kevin Smith voice creeps in. Where you can tell he's not even trying to write the character, he's just saying what he has to say in his voice.
Now, yeah, we've talked about this. I don't know if we've done it on air in past episodes.
Might have come up when we reviewed Clerks.
Right. But I would say most writer-directors, you're going to see that. You're going to see them do that.
It doesn't annoy me when, for example, Tarantino does it a lot, but it doesn't annoy me when he does it.
Yes, Tarantino does it a whole shitload.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff between Travolta and Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction it was completely that Gallagher synchronized ping pong thing.
Mm. Yeah, you know? Yeah, you're right. But when Smith does it, it gets heavy-handed.
Smith has a very distinctive voice is the problem, I think.
Yeah, it's easier to notice. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, Tarantino does too, but it's going so quickly and it's a lot of the time it's light.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Smith, you know, you could definitely tell his voice. I think you're going to hear that from just about any writer director. It just depends on whether they have a voice you actually want to listen to.
True, and Smith's voice, unless it's Smith doing the lines, or maybe Brian Halloran pulled it off. Both of them, Jeff Anderson and Brian Halloran, both pulled it off in Clerks, so it didn't bother me.
Well, yeah, he gets these guys to play himself, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, he has Affleck playing himself in this one. What's his name? Has played him in the last couple. Why am I drawing a blank on the guy's name? He's pretty big now. The one from Zack and Miri. Zack.
Yeah, the guy from Freaks and Geeks. Seth
that
Rogen.
Guy. Yes.
Yeah, he was in Zack and Miri, he obviously was Smith.
Yeah. But, you know, they make this whole thing about, oh, you know, you were brought up Catholic, and, you know, I mean, once you hear that, you're like, okay.
Yeah, that's Smith.
That's the sign. That's Kevin right there.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I, you know, listen to his podcast often. He has a voice that you know, got no problem listening to.
I actually don't mind it when it's him. Mm. It's when he sticks it. I'll rephrase that. When he puts his voice
Really?
In the mouth of a character who isn't
Oh,
him.
that's not getting better. That's not better.
Okay. When you have a character who isn't Smith speaking exactly like Smith, it bugs me.
The whole homophobic. They're trying to shove this down our throats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, maybe not yours.
And there's a couple of other scenes. The whole Jersey City exchange, when they're talking about, you know, where, when they find out they're both from the same place,
Yes.
that was fan service. Plain and simple fan service. And then she randomly says, "But I can tap," which made no sense.
Wait a minute, but she, which, what are you talking about?
In the scene in the bar when they meet and they find out they both went to the same school and they're from the same town, and it's all the fan service to Mallrats and Clerks.
Well, yeah, because he has his,
Yeah, but then she, in the middle of that speech, I forget what the transition was, but she randomly says, "But I can tap." It makes no sense.
I gotta watch that again to
You
pick
didn't
that up.
notice that.
No, I don't think I've ever noticed that.
It's right in the middle of that scene.
I thought
It
you were
just
gonna talk about,
confused me.
he always wanted to be a dancer in
Oh,
Vegas.
well, do we want to get to that? As you can tell, my opinion was kind of eh for most of the movie. Picked up when they finally brought in Jay and Silent Bob. Now, am I correct that they weren't originally intended to be in the movie?
Probably not.
I think Mallrats was supposed to be their last movie. Because I'm pretty sure they were planned for that one.
Yeah.
But they were so bloody popular that he pretty much was forced to write them into everything.
And
So
this was cool because it was just them picking up a check,
yeah. You gotta wait till, you know, most of the way through the movie. So like it's in the last half hour. Now when I saw it in the theater, I actually rather loudly said, "It's about fucking time," when they showed up.
Well, see, you were looking for them.
Got quite a laugh from the rest of the people in the theater.
Yeah.
That scene was brilliant. The best Silent Bob speech ever. And the jazz hands still kills me.
Yeah, because you were watching Showgirls and watching a couple episodes ago, and when she's in the theater doing,
Yeah.
that's all I could think of is Kevin Smith.
And when Jason's fat bastard does this all the time, when they're basically self-referentially saying, yeah, he has this speech in every movie.
Yeah,
Loved that.
of course.
But it's a typical, it's basically Jay and Silent, or Silent Bob explains the title, is the point of that speech.
Well, right.
And it's a plot point to kind of point,
He's giving him the sagely
yeah,
advice.
and
He's
pointing
telling him what to do, trying to point him in the right direction.
Him towards his second or arguably third spectacularly bad decision.
But that's the thing. How do you get the solution
Yeah.
that he came up with from Silent Bob's speech?
I have no idea.
The advice Silent Bob gives him, because I mean the problem Holden has is that not she's not just a lesbian,
Right.
she was a hoe,
And in
as they like
short,
to
Bob
put
tells
it.
him, "Get over yourself."
Yeah, just to get over yourself, be grateful for what you've got, and go move forward. He somehow takes from that, we need to have a threesome.
Yeah.
How?
Well,
How?
because he's put together at this point that Banky is in love with him.
Yeah.
And he figures, okay, well, there's this whole convoluted logic about how this would fix both relationships.
Right. The point, it was, of course, it was all about him.
Yeah, of course.
Everything, had to, revolve around him in some way. It couldn't just be all right, you do what you want to do, I'll do what I'm going to do, and we go forward.
Right.
But not many people would actually obtain that maturity going from where he was coming from? Now, would they have come up with that solution?
No.
Oh, I don't think so.
But I will say, those two scenes in particular are my favorite parts of the movie. The Silent Bob and Jay and Silent Bob scene and the confrontation. As insane as his logic is, it's a great scene.
It's disturbing as hell.
Oh, yeah.
It is the train wreck. It really is. It's probably one of the biggest train wreck scenes I can think of, where it really works
Yeah.
in that regard. That it's intended to be just this terrible disaster. All I could think of is the fucking Hindenburg crashing when I watched that scene and just going up in
Knowing
flames.
full well what was coming, watching it earlier today, I still was taken aback, thinking, what the fuck is he doing?
You just can't help but cringe
Yeah.
from beginning to end, and it's just damn perfect in that aspect. And I remember so many people hated that. I remember so many people saying, just walk out after Jay and Silent Bob, are done, because it's going to go down. But no, this is what makes this
Oh yeah.
the great film that it is.
Well, we'll talk about that, but it is definitely the high point of the movie.
Because it's just, I mean, it's not played for laughs. It's just, it was what it was. It was this deluded person, self-centered, deluded person, thinking that he could just solve everybody's problems with this dumbass solution.
Yeah. Spectacularly bad decision, is that the best way you can put it? But in all parties, even Adams, played the scene brilliantly.
Oh my God, yes. Just
And there's even a couple of spots where Lee has to play it a little softer, which is not what he's known for, but he nails it.
it's perfect, because you have Affleck trying to be, the smarmy one again, trying to sell this plan. You have Lee, who is just he just he's in shock.
He's confused because he's finally getting what he wants and finally having to admit to himself that's what he wants.
Right, exactly. He's shocked, he's
And you
stunned.
can see all of those layers.
And then you have Joey Lauren and Alyssa on the other side going, don't see,
No, no.
figuring out what he's going to do
And just,
before.
no, you're not doing this. This is not happening.
Yeah, just, oh no. And that just so adds to the tension
Yeah.
too. And of course, he's just so oblivious, he doesn't even get it that she's already shot it down. I mean, she can see what he was going to propose and has already shot it down,
Right.
and yet he's still going forward with it.
It is, you're right, it is an absolute, it is watching the train wreck, but it's
Oh
an
yeah.
incredibly enjoyable train wreck.
Wow. It is the Hindenburg just completely disintegrating in front of you.
Now, you mentioned that a lot of people say stop before that scene.
Yes.
My take was always stop the movie after that scene.
Oh, really?
Because that scene ends, everything is destroyed. I like that ending. He completely fucks up his life. And then they flash to a year later.
Right.
And it's basically the three of the, establishing, that the relationships have disintegrated over the past year and maybe leaving a door open for some hope. And the scene was just, to me, was unnecessary and just maudlin.
It really, you know what? Up until last night, I had always thought that, there was no going back, that it was just, open, shut, done.
Right.
But seeing it last night and seeing Alyssa in this kind of new light of like her being just as fucked up as he
Right. Yeah.
is, most likely they could still get back
Oh,
together.
history will repeat itself, yeah.
Right. Not necessarily saying that's a good thing
No,
either.
no. Not at all.
Sometimes the happy ending isn't they get back together and it's all good. Sometimes people are just better off going their separate ways.
Yeah. Another issue I had with that scene, basically, Banky and Holden have this conversation via hand signals.
Yes.
They were very slow hand signals.
What?
Annoyingly slow. And very obvious while this fan is trying to talk to Banky. You would think he's trying to carry on this conversation with a fan and signal to Holden. You'd think he'd be a bit quicker and more subtle about it. They were really telegraphing it. Also, the scene needed Hooper. We needed a final scene with Hooper.
Yeah, maybe they could have had something with like another panel before the scene began.
Or just pan out. Don't even if they didn't have the actor, just pan to a sign with a panel of his.
No,
you know, bookend it.
Now that you mention it, before that scene began, there should have been some quick cut. It should have began with the cut of him having some sort of, you know, publicity stunt at another panel with somebody else where he's doing the dog and pony show with someone else. Maybe like a KKK guy or something.
Right.
All, of course,
just
a work.
Because
this is just brilliant.
This is why I say Hooper's a plot point. We don't see him again after the record store.
Nah.
He hooks them up. He tries to give some advice to Holden. Fails. Or Holden fails to receive it.
That's the thing.
And then he's gone. We never see Hooper again.
Everybody tries to give him advice, and he fails to take it.
Yeah.
He just doesn't listen.
So I'm kind of done with my notes. On to sequels and remakes.
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
This is a sequel. It's part three of the Viewisk universe, or otherwise known as the Hanging Out movies, the Jersey trilogy, the, you know, several names.
Right.
And so it's part three of that series, and there are three more after it.
We see all these guys again in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, pretty much.
Yeah.
I think they're just cameos, you know.
But all six movies take place in the same universe, so it can all be considered, you know, they're all sequels to Clerks.
Right.
Effectively.
Right.
Mallrats
in the series if we were going in order.
Well, yeah, I think we decided against Mallrats for whatever reason. We just went to this one. Well, for obvious reasons we were doing
Yeah. Well, because... Well,
and we
Mallrats,
didn't want to do a whole Kevin Smith thing.
Right. Mallrats, of course, it's pretty much your straight, you know, 80s-style comedy. You
exactly.
Know? There really isn't much to talk about it except for, you know, the odd casting here and there. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong. Hilarious movie.
Yeah,
love it. And that's what would the episode have just been of us
that's
saying how
true.
Much we love the movie.
Yeah, it would have been
it's
more...
the same reason why we haven't done Office Space or The Holy Grail.
Right.
just because, you know what was great?
Exactly.
You know what was great?
Actually, I think deciding to do this one came out of me saying it was one of my least favorite Smith movies.
Right.
And he said it'd be a good one to cover.
And I'm in it.
Yeah, that too.
Well, actually, I thought that we were doing this because after the trilogy of shit, there was last week's, which was one of your favorites.
And then one of your favorites. Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
That wasn't really... I mean, the initial plan to put it on the list, but...
cleansing our palate still.
Yeah, sort of. Obviously, remake way too soon.
Man,
and it's never going to be remade because it's a Smith movie. He's an auteur. Right.
Yeah, he's not going to let anybody just fuck. I mean, he'd have to come back and remake it, and I doubt he would do that.
Right.
But though, I mean, it would be awesome to see two other people playing the leads.
Yeah. Or just, well, one other person. Like we mentioned before, cast Lee as Holden and
well,
give someone else Banky.
Someone other than Affleck and Adams.
Oh, the leads, right, yeah.
Would be pretty cool to see. I mean,
yeah. And okay, on to Brains.
Yeah.
Because that's my issue. I think the idea of the story is good. The point of it is great. Now, I never really thought about it as two monumentally fucked up people getting together. I never really looked at it that way.
Yes.
So I love that idea.
Yeah.
But the execution is problematic. You have, you know, the Smith voice, which I have trouble with, some very sketchy casting, but again, great supporting work. I loved the last two of the last three scenes.
The man from scene 24.
The Jane Silent Bob scene and the confrontation scene were, I think between the two of them, bring it up a half a brain for me. But still, I'm gonna have to go 3.5.
Oh, wow. I think I should change my name now to the man from scene 24.
It was that scene 24?
No, but
Oh, okay.
That's, you know.
It seemed kind of early to be scene 24.
But that's what it went, you know, the man from scene 24.
I'm not getting the reference.
It's a Grail reference.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it. I have to watch that again soon.
That was the guy from the bridge. He was just referred to as the man from scene 24,
okay.
And he would just appear, you know, at this, look, it's the man from scene 24.
I have to rewatch
like,
it
actually,
sometime soon.
All right. Since the script is 15 years old, and it still inspires such heavy debate. And really, I was thinking, wow, man, are we just doing, like, is this their first chick flick that we're doing? Is this the best chick flick ever? But it's not. It is about, you know, relationship. Or actually, it's about two relationships, I guess you could say. But it's just so raw and just full speed ahead. And it has the best supporting cast in the history
Absolutely.
Of film. So I'm giving it 5 brains.
Wow. Okay. So what have we learned?
Should I break down my brains, what I'm giving it? How many brains should I give for myself?
That's a good, at least one.
All right. So yeah, I get a brain. Really, if I was being critical, I would only take it down about half a brain maybe for the two leads, because they did have their moments, but for the most part, I was expecting Joey Lauren Adams to call Ben Affleck a blockhead because she just sounded like Lucy from Charlie Brown throughout most of it. What I learned though was that Ben Affleck is the devil. Never turn your back on him.
And I learned that I really miss playing skee-ball.
It's like Spanish Fly.
So, until next week when we will be reviewing Teenage Caveman. This is going to be fun. I know this movie. I've been wanting to review it for some time.
Well, this is actually beginning
an All Request trilogy.
An All Request trilogy. Actually, if you have more requests, we'll keep going. There might be a bit of an interruption in the middle of it, but of the trilogy, but... yeah, keep them coming, requests.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, the links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. By the way, is it tomorrow? March 1st? The Facebook page is going to be changing?
Timeline.
Yes, they're going to Timeline. So the regulars on the Facebook page, just bear in mind, it's going to look a little different in the near future.
I don't know. They're fans of irony in Facebook. They have this thing called Timeline, yet for the most part, it is not kept in chronological order. Wrap your head around that.
You can also find the movie list, the recommendations list, which thankfully this didn't quite make it to. Also, you can send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
No matter where you call from.
So, until next week, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.
Look at what I have to resort to for professional respect.
Pains me that we're not going to be substituting Cunt Rag for Zombie Takeout.